Space, the final frontier.
Tron Simpson here, your weekday morning host on Legends Radio. Next year, Star Trek, the original series, turns 60 years old. You're probably going to hear a lot about that in the coming months. I turn 60 years old next year, too, so I thought this would be kind of fun. And, you know, there are some aspects about Star Trek that many of us know, like, how about this? Fans kept Star Trek alive after the first season. They wrote letters, and NBC kept it on the books, and we got three seasons out of them. Also, interestingly enough, Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock, he invented the Vulcan nerve pinch, neck pinch, because he didn't want to go around hitting people over the head with phasers. He thought an alien would have a certain power, and the producers loved it.
You're out of your Vulcan mind, Spock.
And very importantly, Lucille Ball. Yep, I love Lucy. Without Lucy and her advocacy, Star Trek would have never happened. Her company, her production company, Desilu Studios, made it happen.
Gee, that's a wonderful idea.
But today, I want to talk about the exploration kit, the props, the toys that I've loved over these years, and maybe you have too. The phaser, the communicator, the tricorder, and no better way to do that than with my friend John Long. He is a model maker, a prop maker, and yes, an avid Star Trek fan, and he made his fandom work for him. And some amazing stories going to come out of him right now. And then, of course, William Shatner will join us towards the end of the show. But right now, let's talk to John Long, my friend. How are you?
Good, sir. Good. Thank you.
Oh, somebody actually called me sir. That's wonderful.
Hey, you don't have to call me sir. I know who my dad was.
You know, John Long, you, like millions of us kids, and older folks too, really fell into the Star Trek original series and spell, if you will, brother. I mean, the uniforms, the props, the ship, of course, they were just mesmerizing to us as young kids, middle-aged kids, whatever it was. And you, my friend, made a career out of it, and a very blessed one, to be sure.
Hey, that was accidental. I got to tell you, John.
Really? Well,
I was supposed to be this cute little actor kid.
Well, I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
But my true passion was, you know, working with my hands and making cool stuff.
You know, it's really cool. And some of the folks out there listening, granted, they may not know this person, but some of those Star Trek fans out there will know the name Wah Chang. You knew that genius very well, did you not?
Oh, my goodness. He was a dear friend. And I'm flipping through the Star Trek sketchbook or something.
Yeah.
And I see Walter Jeffries, and my dad and him were tight. When I was a little kid, he used to bring me with him when he would go to visit. Until, you know, my adult life, I don't even think he realized that his friend, Walter Jeffries, was the art director and main designer for all things Star Trek.
Right.
So they were just airplane people, right. My dad and him. I see the image of Mr. Chang in the book, and I'm just looking at it and thinking about all the work he did and the fact that his hand props were the very things that brought me into the industry as a special effects artist and prop and model maker. I saw, you know, yeah, he's in Carmel, but even then, he was an old guy.
Right.
So I don't know what compelled me to be willing to. It's kind of after hours, and even at that time, Mr. Chang's got to be, you know, in his late 80s. So I called 411 and asked, you know, Carmel, California, Wah Ming Chang, and the lady's like, okay, let me get you that number. Instead of writing it down, I asked her, could you disconnect me?
Yeah, right.
She does. Phone rings a few times. Guess who answers the freaking phone?
Mr. Chang. The genius himself. Yes. The
prop
designer, Wah Chang, answers the phone.
Dude, after hours. And anyway, but we hit it off right off the bat. So that ended up being, like, you know, the last 10 years or so of his life. Him and I were good friends, talked often on the phone and stuff. I love that guy. His work was such a huge part of the spirit of Star Trek. Agreed. I mean, the gadgets of Star Trek.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The hand props are so important to sell you on a storyline.
100%.
Wah Ming Chang, he came up with the communicator and the tricorder. but the way he did it, he kept them all in the same vein. So it's like the materials and color patterns and schemes and whatnot were matching enough that they were of the same universe, same time period.
Absolutely. But, yeah. And the thing is, they've stood the test of time. There are no gadgets as you call them. There are no props like them. We've seen the cell phone. We've seen how the cell phone came about. The tricorder now is, you know, basically our iPads and so forth. It's amazing but the actual items themselves, as kids, we wanted those so bad, and they were not. They didn't exist. You created the hand phaser and communicator kits, which were extremely popular. How did that come about?
So even though I love, you know, weapons, for some reason, that black box with the magical shiny flip open antenna.
Oh my gosh.
That anyone holding it could communicate with each other or the Enterprise that was out of sight somewhere, called down fire from above with that little flip open gadget, right? Yes. And so, I mean, so like so many of our fellow Trek nerds, you know, I had to set out to build my own. So we had cardboard and aluminum foil and stuff we could get out of mom's sewing kit.
You got it.
You know, we're like, fast forward a bit. I don't think that initially I planned on being a professional prop and model maker. I had to, I guess, as I got older, mm-hmm. I honed my skills trying to create stuff like that. And you go from cardboard to balsa wood
right.
to plastic to where you're actually creating your own vacuform machine. But it's just, it was like one thing after another. I mean, and my dad, he was a skilled artist, but my dad showed me how to do this kind of thing. My little hand phasers and pistol phasers and communicators and stuff. And in truth, I didn't even, I thought I was like the Lone Ranger on that deal. I didn't realize that we had a whole gigantic community of, you know, total diehard Trek nerds.
Let me tell you something, John. If it hadn't been for people like you who learned how to do this, people like me wouldn't be able to be playing with them today.
Oh, I know, right?
And then, you know, and you created jobs out of this too. I mean, that's what happened. And it was such a great run for all of these. And then not too long ago, I think it was about a year ago, there was this auction. Everybody, let me just, and I'll be very succinct about it. Captain Kirk's phaser, the one that William Shatner used, and I've talked to Bill Shatner about this. It went from an expected sale price of $100,000. It actually sold at auction for $910,000. And folks, listen to this. Captain Kirk's communicator, the same auction, estimated at about $100K. It sold for $780,000. This gentleman who we're talking to right now, John Long, he restored both of those artifacts. That's incredible. What a deal. What a dream come true, sir.
Yeah, right. Well, in truth, they didn't expect even the initial prices that you mentioned.
Right. That's what they told me.
Their perceived market value had been corrupted due to Greg Jean's pieces getting swooped up by one of his family members uh-huh. right after he died.
Okay.
And there's a whole story to that,
sure.
too. But Greg and I, we were dear friends. Oh, my gosh. He was like a hero to me. Anybody that doesn't know who Greg Jean was, he worked on every cool thing there is.
Sure did.
His generosity is what enabled me to make the really accurate stuff. He gave me total access to his collection. Amazing generosity. And spooky, too, because before I was anybody in the industry, I mean, I didn't think anybody knew who I was. He was just like this icon figure. And my friend Kelly Mann, he brought me my first visit over to see Greg. And freaking Greg Jean knew who I was. You want to talk about
that? That's amazing.
Weird.
Yeah. That was just, it's got to be a humbling experience in a way. At the same time, just completely, just a flash lightning bolt going through your entire system.
I brought a book with me to ask him to please sign it. Takes the book from my hands and says, okay, give me a minute or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Disappears into his little private office, leaves Kelly and I standing there for I don't know how long. Comes back, I don't know, 15 minutes later, and hands me the book back. I open it up and he used both the inside cover and the first blank page or whatever, a silver paint pen, and he took up the whole space of that whole two pages open on a large coffee table book. He draws out in amazing detail the mothership from Close Encounters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And says something at the bottom. I wish I had the book handy right now. Something along the lines of, keep the dream alive. All the best, your friend, Greg Jean. Something like that. I was like, blah, blew my mind.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Right?
What a
deal. Yeah, right. And then fast forward a bit. Now, up until that point, all we had for reference was what we had for reference. If you had, you know, the making of Star Trek.
Yeah, the book. Tron and John are going into geek mode here. Yeah, but that's what happens because I told you folks we're doing this as a 60th anniversary of Star Trek special, and we can do that. But John, I mean, that's the whole thing, and it's just great. I got to know John over this past year, and we became friends. And his stories. I mean, we can talk and talk. And I wanted to ask you this too, John. Do you have any projects that you're considering or concerning Star Trek or any other sci-fi projects when it comes to props and that sort of thing, or is that kind of still gelling, or is that in the works, or I have to ask you?
Well, in truth, I've had so many reach out to me and ask me if I will be doing any additional stuff, if I can, if I'd consider it. I might do cool. something further. The toy versions of the props are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, mask, there's nothing the same as studio grade to help you relive your greatest Trek fantasies. And
you said
it's
that
just
so
a
well.
Difference.
You're exactly you know? Right. By the way, I want to mention there's an article, if people haven't read it, it's an older article, but you wrote it. It's from Star Trek Communicator Magazine. I believe it was issue 155 back in 2005. It's a great layout, and you expound on all this stuff. So, folks, I would recommend that to you as well. But you said it. These props, those props back then are the props that you make. They don't have a bunch of IC circuits in them and do the gizmo and that. And those are fine. Those are, as you say, those are toys. But the real scratch built, the real thing that was made, and here we have John Long, a national treasure. There's no doubt about it. Actually, I would say an international treasure, my friend.
Wow, thank you for that. But, yeah, and your question, I think I would like to bring something else to fruition. So yeah, I you mentioned that one Hero pistol phaser around this time last year. They were thinking, you know, maybe 100 to 200 grand, which is a lot of money, I guess.
Sure it is.
Because Greg's went for like $160, and that was because it was pretty badly damaged.
Uh-huh. Irritating. Ah, yes. One of your earth emotions.
They almost, you know, again, it almost pulled at auction. So Greg's pistol phaser sold for, like I said, $160,000.
Right.
So they were thinking that, you know, it'd be right around there. And I was like, no, this is $1 million item.
Yep.
And it was. Well, yeah. But in truth, the way I restore historic items like that, I make it a point to not over restore and don't use modern day equipment or materials. Just do it period correct methods and materials. So it's like, you know, you want to be a prop purist,
right?
When it comes to that stuff. If I told you, you're one of two or three people that know about it.
Yes, sir.
So I'm with God's help, because I was like, you know, God, how am I going to do this?
Right.
And lo and behold, had to have it ready for bright and early Saturday morning when the auction actually started for real. I mean, people were bidding online already, but 4.5 hours after it left my gate, the gavel dropped at like $1 million. That particular pistol phaser, that was the hero that enjoyed the lion's share of screen time.
Yes, sir.
Cloud Miners, when we saw that pistol lying on that the heap of dirt. That was it. Gamesters of Triskelion, when they try to pull their weapons out, when they found themselves, some people refer to it as the Finny, because we see him holding it. Every time they needed the best of the best for a close-up, and sometimes even when it was not necessary,
right.
That was apparently their go-to piece. So I knew this is the thing. The communicator that they had, I refer to it as the cat's paw, because it was one of the two hero communicators. And the reason I bring this up, the irony of it is, since I was a little kid, the one scene that I think grabbed me the tightest, as it pertains to the communicator prop, was in that episode Cat's Paw, when that witchy woman made the communicator magically appear on the table.
Yeah.
And the angle of it and the clamshell shaped box,
right.
and everything, and it was imperfect enough to be even all that much more believable as a piece of landing party gear. And that was, I mean, I kid you not, years and years before I ever held any of the original screen used items, I somehow got a still of that picture. And that was me holding in one hand a block of balsa wood, in the other hand a sanding block, and staring back and forth at that still from Cat's Paw, trying to get the shape of that wood to mimic precisely the look of that communicator in Cat's Paw. And a lot of people don't realize this, but sometimes the images, whether deliberately or otherwise, get stretched in one direction or another. And in this case, in this scene on Cat's Paw, it was kind of stretched a little horizontally. So the ones that I was making and even got famous for before I had hands on with the real deal, I was so trying to copy that they were a little wider and stubbier. And but the bizarre thing, the reason I bring this up, the communicator that probably lent to my being a professional prop maker in the first place, that very communicator, not one of them, not one of the handful of communicators that we saw as kids watching Trek, but that one. And lo and behold, fast forward 600 years, and that exact one is brought to my door to fix?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, give me a freaking break.
You're out of your Vulcan mind, Spock.
Yeah.
So the way it arrived, and there was no doubt, and I was like, prepared to be the bearer of bad news, because I can't tell you how many counterfeits and forgeries people have brought to me authenticate. And it's like, yeah. And sometimes it's like I have to tell them, well, in truth, that's pretty cool and everything, but I made that 25 years ago.
That's my handiwork, pal.
Sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah,
but I was kind of prepped to tell them that again.
Yeah.
But they bring me two pieces that immediately, it's like, whoa. I knew exactly what I was looking at immediately. And the communicator, though, the cat's paw com, as I refer to it, we got one of the best close-ups of it open and functioning in Day of the Dove, right?
Yes, sir.
So what the way it was, the condition it was brought to me, and it was basically just a husk of an iconic piece of television sci-fi history.
Right.
Because a couple of the pieces, like, you know, one of the control knobbies was gone, and all things pertaining to the bezel. They did bring a stopwatch. I'm not 100% sure that that one was ever installed in there, but it was certainly when the person managed to acquire it years ago, that was included.
Okay.
But it showed no evidence of ever having anything affixed to the face of the watch. That's why I was, you know, but didn't have a functioning watch, anything in the way of bezels, nothing in the way of the two-part Moray graphic required to create that magical animated Moray. And of course, the stopwatch winder extension, nothing there, totally missing. So it was just a husk.
What in the name of heaven is this?
And even though I totally was amazed at it for what it is, was, I realized that they would be lucky, even for what it was, even people in the know, because it didn't have the necessary signature details. I thought, man, they'll be lucky to get $3,000, $5,000 for this. I personally would have paid, you know, $20,000, $25,000 for it or more if I had it.
Right.
Because I would restore it for myself, right?
Of course.
But, it was a beautiful thing. But the way it was, just hollow, nothing there.
Yeah.
I thought, man, they'll be lucky to get $3,000, $5,000 for it. But after doing a proper restoration using, you know, the vintage materials and stuff and just bringing it back exact, I even sacrificed my last remaining of the 1965 Edmund Scientific Moray, two-part Moray set with the opaque and the transparency. Right. So I sacrificed my best set to do it right and used one of my best 1960s mechanical stopwatches, put it all together the way our dear friend Watching originally did it for the show. And lo and behold, that freaking thing sold for what, $800,000? When you add the buyer's premium and the tax, it was like right at the brink of $1 million
for that freaking thing. $2 million for both of them. It's amazing.
Yes. So I was so happy to be able to do that. Now, here, the reason you brought up Greg, the reason I mentioned the irony of that is not only did he have the world's largest collection of the coolest stuff on the planet when it comes to television and movie history. I mean, and he was a guy, he never bragged about that stuff. I knew him for like 30 years, over 30 years, and I didn't even know all he had. Right. He wasn't one of those guys who wanted to boast and show off his stuff. He was a pretty personal, private dude, right?
Right.
But he, and not many people know this, but and him and I, he had me do work for him and stuff. We got along so well. And I have friends who knew him and worked with him before. In the early 70s. So he had the best of friends. But he used to tell me over the years, just out of the blue, he'd say, I'm going to leave you all the TOS stuff. Oh, so my cookie cutter response was always, well, that's great, Greg, but just don't die.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good answer.
But he would even tell you, yeah, what he did not want to have happen to the stuff that he, you know, he loved the collection. What he didn't want to have happen was have all of those cool things disappear into the abyss of an auction. So he knew that if he left the TOS stuff to me, I would take care of it. I'm not going to sell it off.
Sure.
I will leave it to somebody else who would do the same when I get close to kicking the bucket. But he never got around. He got sick and old and apparently procrastinated about writing a will.
Yeah.
So the exact same thing that he did not want to have happen is exactly what happened. Now, the reason I tell you this is because him gifting me the hands-on experience to create exacting replicas of the items that we all love, I was a little upset. It's horrible that he died.
Yes.
Freaking died, man. He's like, you know, when you start feeling like, you know, all your friends and family are gone, you start feeling like the last lobster in the tank, you know?
Yeah. But,
Scotty, beam me up.
Well said, sir.
But the fact that the very pieces that he let me fall in love with in person, not just on screen, they disappear to this direction and that direction. Mm-hmm. But the circle of life, because the circle of props, prop circles.
Yes.
The thing is, though, the very pieces that that he let me copy to make my licensed pieces, my licensed kits, also the prototypes I did for other licensed companies, masterpiece models, master replicas, because he gave me the hands-on experience documenting, photographing, measuring, copying the daylights out of these pieces, they came back to me because the new owner, our friend Don, who put Julian's Auction House in contact with me to begin with, and I didn't know Don at the time, he reached out to me and kind of apologized for reaching out to me and asked me, hey, is it cool if I give your contact info to Julian's Auction? I said, yeah, sure. Anyway, but because that went so well, and some of this I'm guesstimating, but the way it worked out is then the new owner of Greg's stuff, he too, through Don, asked me if I would be willing to restore the pieces that, you know, that hero pistol phaser of Greg's. and at least start out with one of the two communicators that that Greg had, the original screen used ones, and the be all to end all in the way of the Hero tricorders. There were Hero tricorders, and as you probably know, and there's rumors all the time, you know, but there was a freaking studio working on a shoestring budget of time and money, and so when items got broken or needed slight alterations for a scene or whatever, they did Frankenstein the pieces here and there. So, but the way this particular tricorder came to me, it's all of the best of the best that you can just screen match. There's no doubt about what you got in your hands. And I don't know where the damage and the abuse happened, if it happened at the studio or shortly thereafter, but it was so sad when the little top door and the bottom door were closed, and you tilted the head up on the tricorder 3 feet away, and you're like, that's beautiful. But you open up the hatches, and you're like,
that's a hopeless pile of junk.
So I even included a couple of Greg's old friends, and we just kind of tabled the ideas for the appropriate restoration, and brought it back to exactly what it was in its prime. Even the things that I had to recreate to add back where they were missing. Same materials, same technique in creating them. Did it in a way that if you want to remove them, you can.
Right.
So it's you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So Greg's and Greg's Hero pistol, even like Greg had that pistol phaser for something like 50 years.
Right.
And apparently it never lit up. And the whole time that he had it, nobody ever saw that thing. The little hand phaser, the hand unit.
Yes.
And the pistol portion never lit up. So I had the cojones to do it because I had to fix the other one.
Sure.
That was the freaking Rolls Royce of Hero pistol phasers.
Right.
So, and it was like visiting an old friend because that's the very one that I copied for my kit.
Right.
And so the irony those very same pieces circled around about back to me to fix them, give them the 10 or 11 care that they required. And I shared with the new owner of that pistol phaser that his now is back where it should be in the $1 million league, because it's not the little stepbrother of the other one. These are matching. These are twins. The difference being that one was left with the Velcro on the side of the phaser one, so it would be quote unquote holsterable.
Right.
But other than that, they're out of the same molds, the same materials, the same everything. So that was pretty cool.
There's so much more, you know. And I hope you do. I hope you're thinking about writing a book about all this, John.
Well, maybe I will. Right.
Maybe you should. Because we're going to save all of this information. You'll never have to speak it again. And as you said, look, it's a blessing. This is a God thing. This is how God works in our lives. And, this is our father's. Like, he knows what his kid's like. And, you know, sometimes it's Star Trek. Sometimes it's Western. Sometimes it's a horse, a real horse. Sometimes,
dude, you are so right about
that. That's the way it is. That's the way it works.
He God is generous. He's got a great sense of humor.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Look at me.
But the very fact that all of the best pieces, one way or another, cycled through my little shop. I mean, I was bound to be working in the industry. I mean, for 20 plus years, I worked for Walt Disney Imagineering doing sculpting and stuff for them. But all of that came about as a result of my fascination with the landing party gear held in the hands of our heroes on the original Star Trek.
Right. John Long, man, it's so good. It's so much fun to talk to you, and it's so much fun to have you share your stories with our listeners. This is such a blast. And, you know, it'll make its way. Yes, it's on the radio, but it'll be on Facebook and everywhere else so people can listen to this too. And man, just keep doing what you're doing, and you know I'll be staying in touch with you. I so much appreciate it. Again, you're making your dreams come true, but at the same time you're creating that possibility for many others, and you've been doing so for many years. And blessings to you, my friend. I really appreciate you doing this. You're a blast, and gee whiz, you know, happy 60th Star Trek, right?
I know, right? And we've got to keep in mind the best way to enjoy our blessings is to share them with others.
Amen, brother. John Long, everybody, right here on our special, our Star Trek 60th anniversary special.
As promised, we've got to talk to the captain of the Enterprise. Otherwise, we don't have a Star Trek 60th anniversary special, right?
It's a mystery, and I don't like mysteries. Give me a bellyache, and I got a beauty right now.
That's exactly right. Captain James T. Kirk, William Shatner. He's an amazing actor. He's been to space, a grandfather, a dad, a great-grandfather, and he's my friend. He's been on the show many times. Bill, I want to get right into it. And for those who don't know, would you please tell everyone how you got involved in the original Star Trek series?
Well, I was in New York doing something else, and Gene Roddenberry called me. They had made a pilot. They had hired somebody, a wonderful actor, and they went to sell that show, and the network NBC didn't want to buy it. It wasn't, but they said this is a really interesting idea. Recast, do everything else new, and we'll take another look at it. And that's when he called me and said, would I be interested in playing the captain? Then I went to see the pilot film that they had made, and it was really intriguing, and I could see some of the faults that I mentioned, and,
sure.
And we did, then we did. Then I did another pilot, and that sold, and here we are.
Yeah, here we are, and it's just amazing. And I got to tell you this, Bill Shatner, I can't tell you how many times I played the album Has Been. That thing is genius. It really is, man.
How wonderful.
It is.
And I did a Christmas album.
I know, it's great.
That did very well.
With Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, man.
And this blues album is so intriguing. The music is so intriguing, starting with the hollers in the field or the field hands.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping time and then coming up into, you know, the great classics. It's a Lazy Afternoon and those wonderful bluesy songs of today.
Bill, you've done rock, you've done country, you did a country album before the Christmas album. You've done your Christmas album, now you're doing blues. What versatility, I tell you.
Well, it depends on whether you...
Come on!
Whether, you know, it's versatility, you have to be good at it. I question myself all along.
Hey, is it? I heard somebody tell me one time, you... performed. You recorded the Star Trek episodes. You did. You do many of these performances, and but you don't watch them all. Is that right? Have you seen many of the episodes you actually filmed back in the 60s?
Yeah, try not to watch anything. You know, it's like looking at old pictures, I guess. You know, oh my.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, because in my band, I mean, after we play and record it, I don't want to hear myself. Right. I don't want to do it.
I missed the beat on that thing. Exactly.
Well, it's just, yeah, right, and that has happened. William Shatner's our guest. I understand you're going to do a Star Trek cruise, too.
I think I've got myself involved in that, yeah.
That's great. That's great.
But very risky. You're tied up with the people, and you can't escape unless you dive overboard.
Yeah, don't do that. By the way, you can go to williamshatner.com, all things Bill Shatner right there. And we're talking about horses, horseshow.org. That's where all of that stuff is, correct?
My charity is the Hollywood Charity Horse Show.
Yes.
And if you're interested in, because it's a charity for kids in need and veterans in need. And it's I've been going on for 30 years, and I'm still raising money, and over the 30 years, it's been several million dollars.
That is fantastic. And I tell you, you get involved in a cause, and it really it shines, and people understand that. Thanks for setting an example for the rest of us to stay young, brother. I really appreciate it. You rock, William Shatner.
Taking a deep breath and putting one foot in front of the other.
That's exactly right. Have safe travels. God bless you and your family. Appreciate you, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it, folks. Thanks for joining us for a 30-minute look into Star Trek. Some of the cool aspects, like the phaser, the communicator, and the tricorder. And, of course, thank you, Bill Shatner and John Long, for being a part of this show. And, folks, if you ever want to know more about Star Trek, just go on Facebook. There's some really neat groups out there. Happy 60th anniversary to Star Trek 2026, the original series, of course. And thanks for listening to Legends 810 AM and 95.3 FM.